The Koi Gig Pod.
You know, Arsenal are still mathematically going for the title. You know, it's going to be an intense run in for them. And then we've got huge internationals again coming up, and it puts a lot of pressure.
Subscribe to The Koi Gig Pod on the Off The Ball app now.
The Racing Pod
on Off The Ball
with William Hill. Best odds guaranteed at Aintree. We're Aintree ready. Are you? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome to episode 20 of The Racing Pod on Off The Ball. John Duggan and Johnny Ward with you as always. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, bit of crack. The first half of the pod each week free to air. The second part exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join. For members this week, we'll preview Leopardstown on Sunday. So subscribe now for all the juicy info. Johnny Ward, you're a man who knows a lot about the climate. I've never remembered Ireland as wet.
Yeah.
And the impact it has on racing.
I wish I didn't. Like, actually, I think half four or five in the morning last night, I was supposed to be at Wexford Races today. So I'd woken up now. Practically certain that it wouldn't go ahead in my head, but I woke up and I just couldn't sleep thinking about it, because it was, you know, we have a storm on the way again. And I did a piece not that long ago, JD, about the agricultural sector in Ireland, and I felt the state, the government, the department wasn't really in tune with how serious the situation is. And we're in a situation now where the entire Irish agricultural sector is facing a meltdown if this weather doesn't improve. It is in 2024. And obviously racing doesn't compare at all in terms of severity. But, you know, if racing is, at least British racing is stumbling from, it's like one existential crisis at a time. This is really bad. And British racing has dealt with a lot of postponements. But the cancellation, like, I think this was the third time I was supposed to be at Wexford this year and it was called off. So I got onto a racecourse manager about what happens when your meeting is called off. So we've had, in recent times, we've had quite a few. Goran, Clonmel
yesterday.
Wexford, the Naas sprint track were called off. Navan is going to be called off on Tuesday, is my understanding. We've had an inspection at the Curra. Maybe other meetings as well, but a lot in the south, because a lot of this is, the sunny southeast has become very, very wet. So one racecourse manager said to me that basically you get an insurance payout of around about 12 grand.
Yeah.
Now, I think HRI have some sort of system where they try to give the racecourse something back. And obviously the racecourse doesn't have the costs that, ensue on the day of the race to deal with. But the worst fixture would be worth, say, about 50 grand. You're down.
What's that from then? Is it from TV income?
TV income, yeah, by and large. And small, I suppose. And then you're looking at, like, minimum loss is about 43 grand per fixture. What I wasn't aware of was that you get one chance to rerun a fixture within a four-week period, and if it doesn't run, you're gone. So Wexford's initial fixture this year, I was supposed to be at it, was St. Patrick's Day, called off. Paul Maloney, who's the clerk of the course, was up there this morning, and I'd been in touch with him during the week. Tuesday or Wednesday, he said the course was basically waterlogged in places, certainly unraceable. And this is before we get Storm Kathleen coming in. So all of that. Now we have, the Curra's concern tomorrow is to do with the wind. There was a hurling game called off this year for three different reasons, for ice, fog, and then rain. But the rain has been so bad, JD, that we desperately, desperately need. There's the hint of a high-pressure system later in the month that could be a spell of dry weather. And one week of really good dry weather would alleviate a lot of the problems. But I have so much sympathy for the race courses. And the horses and the owners and the connections, they need to run their horses. And I'm not sure they're all happy to go to Dundalk, but I can't see an outcome where Dundalk doesn't run some meetings this year. We have Derby and Guineas trials at Leopardstown,
yeah,
all going well on Sunday. We've massive racing at the Curra on Saturday. And also, anecdotally, like, talking to a guy who has horses ready for the breeze-offs, they haven't been able to work them on grass. They haven't been able to work them on grass at all. You know, Kieran McGeaney's saying after the Division 2 final last weekend, we couldn't train this week. So it's not only a racing problem, but the race course at the moment, the problems where they had in the pandemic, where they had to call off races and then run them behind closed doors, nothing compared to this. Nothing, because there's no really easy solution at the moment.
Yeah, and we have a new all-weather track potentially going into Tipperary as well. So the sooner that comes, the better.
Yeah, to be honest, JD, I was initially against that. I thought, because I didn't think we needed another all-weather track. And it was the location of it in Limerick Junction. And as much as I enjoy going to Limerick Junction, putting an all-weather track that is basically there to run for industry meetings, where like you won't get people going to that. It's as simple as that. It'll be, you know, if you had one in, say, if you had one in the old Phoenix Park, you had one in Dublin, or in an urban centre where people could go. I still think Dundalk's underused in that regard because it's a good night out. Make it into a night out. Like, don't make every meeting an industry meeting. But the more I look at it now, it actually makes sense.
But if you had a race meeting called off Clonmel that you could have flat horses and I might have been a meeting, yeah, but, you know, flat horses run a Tipperary instead.
Yeah, and like I spoke to Aidan O'Brien about this, he won't mind me saying he is worried about the ground conditions in general, and I'm sure they've probably had. I saw an image from a work rider at Ballydoyle the other day where it looked like their ground was quite wet as well. But not everyone wants to run his or her horses at Dundalk as well, and with respect to Dundalk, that's fine. It's an artificial surface. I'm just not sure where they're going to get the runs in, and it's having a cataclysmic effect really, particularly on flat horses.
Hopefully Mother Nature will be listening to the Racing Pod this week and into the future.
Mother Nature at the moment is like an alcoholic who's trying Class A drugs and likes them, unfortunately. And if she is an addictive personality, we're in big trouble.
Okay. The Irish Grand National meeting review. We had intense raffles winning the Irish National as a six-year-old. Could be a Gold Cup horse of the future, in my view. Win a 3.5 mile chase off 11 stone four, only his third run in the UK or Ireland. Obviously, all the races have been a fairy house. One can imagine the horse will improve over the next couple of years. Thought he was really, really visually impressive. And what I was really warmed to see was that Simon Munir and Isaac Swade, who are big owners in National Hunt, sent the horse to Tom Gibney, a small trainer.
Yeah, you'll be aware of the Harald House on occasion in Harald's Cross, JD. I met Tom Gibney in the Harald House. I'd gone in to watch Dundalk of a Wednesday afternoon, which is a bit of a pleasure of mine to watch the racing with a few, like in my local, and have a couple of drinks, a couple of bets. Tom Gibney was there on a Wednesday afternoon. I was like, what are you doing here? He trains in Meath. And he said, I think it was Haydock. I've just come back from Haydock. I was going to run this horse we got from France. And I can't remember why he wanted to run, but I wanted to run in England to get a mark or some such. Bloody meeting was called off this morning. Now I have to go to my daughter's birthday party, which is in Dublin. So I'm going to hang around here. And we have a mutual friend in Harald's Cross that was grand. So I looked up his horse and I was like, how did you get a horse from Munir in Swade? And he kind of explained the story where they came into the yard, stayed in contact and got this horse. And all of a sudden he's won three on the bounce, all at Fairy House, and he might have a Gold Cup contender.
Yeah, any second now, really. Admirable performance for a 12-year-old in defeat. Manana Kakuna ran well off a huge weight. JJ Slevin won the race and now has Panda Boy in the Aintree Grand National and Faster Slow to look forward to at Punchdown.
Yeah, JJ Slevin to win, both Gibney and Slevin to win the race for the second time.
Yeah, general principle for Slevin in 2018 and Leona Barney 2012 for Tom Gibney.
And you might remember when we did our live show, because the guys are ambassadors for William Hill, JJ, Gavin Cromwell and Sean Flanagan. That night, JJ was very candid about a few things, including how he kind of stumbled on the ride in that Irish Grand National. But this ride wasn't. It was a little bit fortunate in that Daryl Jacob was injured. You'd have to have some thoughts for Daryl Jacob because he'd gotten on well with the horse previously. But JJ has a relationship with these owners and he's developing into a jockey now that's just been the guy for the big occasion as well, and had to overcome a mistake in atrocious ground. Bear in mind as well, the funny thing about this race was I was at Fairy House when he made his Irish debut, but he did run subsequently at Fairy House where he won by 40 odd lengths.
That's right, yeah.
In a four-runner race. But the thought process in running him that day was to get him into the Irish National and hope that he'd win. If he hadn't won, he'd have carried 13 pounds less in the National. Do you know what I mean? I said to Tom Gibney this week, you're not much of a trainer when clearly this horse should have been carrying 13 pounds less. I believe the celebrations went on well into the Easter Monday night. But it also means now that considering he's gone up to 150 something, he edges into the territory of a potential Grand National horse, and they have options at Punchdown.
Gold Cup horse, maybe.
A potential Gold Cup horse, rather. But how does he handle good ground will be interesting.
Yeah, and maybe next season.
Maybe we'll never get it again.
You need to give the horse a summer off as a six-year-old, in my view, after that test. Spillane's Tower, great to see Jimmy Mangan have a winner, the Cork trainer, in the Willow Worm Gold Cup. A good ride by Mark Walsh, staying was the essence of the day, and the horse did over 2.5. I'd like to see him next season as well.
Yeah, walk in the park, and I, you know, JP McManus gives his horses to different trainers. I think that's when Jig and Sound were biggest in the game, they concentrated initially on sort of they kind of concentrated on five trainers after a while, and then concentrated down a bit further. And JP McManus never deviated from his system of even small yards of really, really poor strike rates, still have horses for him. And Jimmy Mangan, who's very well able to train, just the difference it makes for national race and for Tom Gibney to have an Irish National winner. The Irish National has been strange in that, like, it continues to run against the tide in terms of the big yards. But for Jimmy Mangan to have a Grade 1 horse and to be able to train him like a Grade 1 horse, back up and trip. I wasn't at Fairy House, I was away now, but I felt that there was a great sort of roar for Jimmy Mangan, who's a popular guy. And I got into racing around the time of Monty's Pass.
Yeah.
And I remember the owner ran the local bingo hall in Whitehall where I was in college. And
Mike Futter.
Yeah, and apparently all the old ladies who played bingo, they'd gotten it on the tannoy to back the horse that week. And I remember so many people had backed it in Whitehall, and that's 20-odd years ago now. But Jimmy Mangan back in the limelight is fantastic.
All and the threes, 33 to 1.
All the 33s. They backed him all the rates down, I think, from 100s. And the National has changed.
All the sixes.
As we'll 66. Talk about. But it's great for racing. Like, I think, you know, William Mullins will acknowledge it as well. And Aidan O'Brien says it, like, we need other people to win.
Yeah. Ile Francais, keep an eye out for this horse who ran so well at Kempton at Christmas. He runs in the Grade 2 Primorat at Auteuil on Saturday. And Noel George and Amanda Zetterholm training this horse. And he's one definitely to watch, Ile Francais.
Yeah, and as you say, when this horse won at Kempton, he looks extraordinarily good. And the campaigning of him has been interesting. The prize money situation is getting... The argument is moving around a bit, where you see some trainers like talking about the better prize money that they're targeting in Britain now. But this horse has definitely been targeted with a view to, I think, the prize money over there and the relationship or the nature of the yard now. The race, actually, I had to see the bottom weight is Gallipoli, which kind of sums up the challenges facing racing at the moment. But no Irish runner. Louisa Carberry has a runner, which is quite interesting. Philip's wife. But this horse is very, very good. He was spectacular when he beat Hermes Allen at Kempton. And he's been campaigned with a view to kind of going back to France. But slightly surprised there isn't an Irish runner in the race. But, you know, we've had a lot of options. And it's kind of heavy ground over there, which we get over here at the moment.
Stefano Cerchi, tragic news this week, was the death of the 23-year-old flat jockey Stefano Cerchi. He passed away after suffering a fall during a race in Canberra, Australia last month. The Italian rode for Marco Botti. He partnered over 100 winners in the UK before moving to Australia for the winter. It is devastating. Our condolences are with his family, his friends, everybody who loved him in racing. It's a reminder that this is a sport that jockeys love, that we love, but it has significant risks. And the jockeys risk their life and their limb every day to do what they love.
Yeah, I hope you won't mind me saying, I spoke to you and a couple of people after the races on Monday, and you spoke about the crowd sort of cheering when a horse fell in front of them.
Yeah, now that could happen anywhere.
It could happen anywhere, but I'd appeal to young people who are getting into racing, do not cheer when a horse falls, because if you want to get up on a horse travelling at that speed with 30 horses behind you who might trample on your head, have a little think about that, because this is a really dangerous game, and it's especially dangerous on the flat. In 2003, we lost three jockeys in Ireland. I was getting into racing at the time, but I found it absolutely devastating, and the repercussions are still being felt by those families. And when it happens on the flat, as we've seen with Graham Lee, it can be extremely bad. Graham Lee, paralysis from the neck down, and what happened to Stefano Cerchi was appalling, and it's a reminder of the risks that these jockeys take. They love the thrill of it, but the dangers are utterly staggering when you think about it. And I thought Kieran Fallon gave a lovely tribute, even Oisin Murphy, when he'd rode a winner at Kempton, I think was it Wednesday night, straight away talking about Stefano. Seemed a really, really good kid, and devastating, absolutely devastating. Never forget how dangerous this sport is.
And over jumps as well, we lost Kieran Kelly, we had John Thomas McNamara with a terrible fall that shortened his life as well. So it's, yeah, we have to be sober, I think, about what this is. A bit like Formula One when you're watching these talented sportsmen and women.
Exactly, Judy. We've had, and you know, there field sports as well can be quite dangerous, but racing's on a different level because of the weight of the horses involved as well. Like you mentioned, Kieran Kelly, that was one of the guys who died in 2003, and then there was Sean Cleary after that, and there was a tragic incident from a rider in that race who also passed away because of the race and because of what happened in the race. And John Thomas McNamara effectively died from the result of his injuries. And when you have a fall on the flat, like Fran Berry has been on here, and Fran has made a great career for himself, he was lucky to get out. George Baker was lucky to get out. Freddie Tillicke was obviously came out badly, but when you look at Graham Lee, it's so dangerous, this sport. And when you look at what happened to Stefano,
tough week for Freddie as well, because he was Stefano's agent.
Yeah, like, and you can imagine how he feels. Like, let's not get away from the fact that jockeys do it because they absolutely love it. And like, one of the highlights for me reporting at the track last year was to see Wesley Joyce have a winner, and yes, actually have several winners after a shocking incident at the Galway races where he could have been killed, and he was just so happy to get back on the horse. And I would appeal to people, if you're in a bookies and you see people cheering somebody falling at the last fence, cop on to yourself.
Yeah, well, rest in peace, Stefano Churchy. Just devastating, terrible news this week from the world of racing. So we're going to look ahead to the Curragh on Saturday, the alleged stakes. Now, hopefully this meeting will go ahead, but look, if it doesn't, there's horses here that we're profiling that will run again. This is a mile and two. It's a Group 3. There's a couple of horses that caught my eye. White Birch was third in the Epsom Derby last year. The only question is whether he's trained on. He set the standard with winning the Ballysack Stakes last year on a seasonal reappearance at Leopardstown. This is at the Curragh, White Birch. And the other one is Maxux. If she's fit, she could be interesting. She won a Group 3 at Ferry House last September, and she looked progressive while doing so.
Yeah, like if we didn't have the stormy conditions that are forecast tomorrow, I like the Curragh gets a lot of flack, and I still.
Why does it get flack?
I think
because it's a bit boring.
Actually, I was talking to somebody about this recently, about when you're writing a piece or when you're doing something, try not to say "I think," because you give something that actually has a bit of backing behind it. So what I'm saying here is slightly based on my opinion, but the Curragh lost a lot of local custom. For whatever reason, and also the place was becoming a little bit dilapidated, very dilapidated actually, and people stopped going, and maybe the whole sort of Coolmore Ballydoyle dominance put people off the flat. But the Curragh's redevelopment, as much as it's slightly flawed, like, it's a beautiful racetrack to visit and to see.
Yeah, it's a fantastic facility now.
If you go up there tomorrow, JD, and see these beautiful thoroughbreds, this race for me, if you can get there and be a good paddock judge and look at the horses, because a lot of them haven't run. You're saying has White Birch trained on off 210 days, Maxus, the Frankel filly, off 201 days. So what do these horses look like in the paddock? I put up Helvic Dream in my racing TV column. I'm going to put him up here as well because he's flat.
It's no mead, is it?
Yeah, he's fit from hurdling. He had his big Group 1, I think possibly Noel's first Group 1 when he won here. What it'd be now, a couple of years ago, but he goes very well on this ground over a mile and two. I see no reason why White Birch shouldn't have trained on, and it was around about this time last year that he emerged as a genuine Derby candidates, and you remember both John Murphy and Jessica Harrington had Derby horses from that trial period, and it was great to see. And White Birch, John and George Murphy's son, George kind of a big part of the operation now, they've become a formidable enough operation, and to see this horse emerge was brilliant. But he won that trial on bad ground. If he's trained on, he's a big player. It's a very hard race to weigh up in the market though, because you mentioned Max's other horses as well with plenty of ability, but we haven't seen a lot of them since last year, and this is proper testing ground.
Helvic Dream is a course and distance winner, and the conditions in suit, and he's fit from hurdling as well, which is the other thing about that horse. Fifth in the race 2 years ago. Make mine a double J. I'm going to be on annual leave next week, Johnny. So I'm going to give you two against the field for the Aintree Grand National, because you'll be doing all those tips with Tom Malone next week.
Lovely.
Mallor Mission at 16 to 1 each way for John
and
McConnell. Good jumper. Stays all day. And ran well in the Hennessy, I call it, the big race at Newbury around December time, and ran well in the 4 mile race at Cheltenham last year. Mallor Mission is an 8-year-old, 16 to 1. And one, I think the race has completely changed. The last 8 runnings of the Aintree Grand National have been won by horses no older than 9. And yet the first 7-year-old winner since 1940, Noble Prince. I think it's a glorified 4 mile hurdle now. and you've got less runners, 34 runners. You've got less of a distance, 2 furlongs, less 4 miles to Limerick Lace at 25 to 1 each way. Hosed up. Beat Dino Blue, like the form of that race. Dino Blue beat Captain Guinness this season in that mare's race and won it easy over 2.5 miles.
Who's her full brother?
I know the way you're thinking. Who obviously stayed 3 mile 2 to win the Kim Muir. Limerick Lace, a 7-year-old. If the race complexion is changing, off 10 stone 7 in the National, she gets into a rhythm. I think she definitely has an each way chance at 25.
I'm still slightly up and down about Walking the Park as a stallion, primarily because he's so expensive. But when Walking the Park horses stay, when they properly stay these trips, they have so much class that it can be an incredible combination. And I was saying this during the week as well, I think Tom Gibney and Gavin Cromwell both have Gold Cup contenders going forward who ran in handicaps in the recent past, and Limerick Lace is very interesting as the sister to Another Way of Thinking.
I believe you're also away next week. It'll be Will O'Callaghan and Tom Malone, so I'll give my two for the National. Do you have one for the National?
I'll pass it on next week, but to be honest, it's Mallard Mission. Yeah.
Mallard Mission. Make mine a double J. Mallard Mission each way in the Grand National entry. This is Friday the 5th, Saturday week the 13th. You heard it here first. Each way 16 to 1 Mallard Mission. This is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball. If you're listening to the free version of our podcast, we'll be leaving you here. But if you're looking for more, including our analysis of the rest of the weekend's racing and a wide angle view of the flat classics, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast every Friday with all of our racing tips, insights and stories from the week's action.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Best odds guaranteed at Aintree. We're Aintree ready. Are you 18 plus? See gamblingcare.ie.